Hi, I'm Nathan Pilatsky, and this is Holy Hypocrites. Welcome to our first episode. My guest today is Ryan Reyes. He's been my best friend since college. He agreed to be sort of a guinea pig as the first interview for this project. He's a teacher, and he had a lot to share about being a Christian in that environment. We talked about the value of letting kids make mistakes, letting people make mistakes. We talked about what separates a good versus a great teacher. You're going to hear that a lot every episode of what separates good versus great and what separates a Christian teacher. What he's experienced trying to share Christ with students without being able to openly talk about it. And finally, talked about what it means to care for people and how, especially as a teacher with many students, what it means to take extra time to care and how that opens doors for sharing Jesus. I think you're going to learn a lot. A little bit of housekeeping. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you're subscribed. And if you would, if you enjoy this episode, if you'd give it a thumbs up, share a comment of how you think you can apply something that Ryan says to your life, whatever career, whatever life you're in. If you would leave a comment, that means a lot. Also, if you're listening to the audio version on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever, if you would, make sure you're following the show. And leave a review if you like it. These are the kind of things that tell Apple and Spotify and YouTube to show these to more people. And so the more you respond, the more you're interacting, the more people get to see it. So I really appreciate that. That's our housekeeping. I'm excited to get to the interview. This is Holy Hypocrites, Episode 1.
When kids feel free to be wrong, they're wrong. You see a lot of the wrong come out. And that gives an opportunity for correction. That gives an opportunity for encouragement. Because one thing that I consciously do with students is I don't tell them wrong. I don't say, you got that wrong. I tell them, I like how you're thinking. I like how you're approaching this problem. And I can see where you got that answer. Now let's try and think about it a different way.
Hello, hello. I'm Nathan. Welcome to this as yet unnamed sample episode of As Yet Unnamed Podcast. I'm here with my best friend in the world, Ryan. He's a teacher online and an expert at board games and sports and many, many other things. But today we're here specifically to talk about his experience as a teacher and his experience specifically as a Christian teacher. So, Ryan, welcome. How are you? Tell us a little bit about how you met Jesus. Let's start there.
Oh, great question. I don't get that question a lot just because I would consider it not a great testimony, but it's one that started when I was 4 years old. I remember going to Brethren Community Church. That's where I went to church and went to school up through middle school. And I had a fourth grade class teacher named Mrs. Long. Old lady. Kind of reminded me of my grandma, but she had just this life about her. Even though she had a walker, gray hair, just a stereotypical old church lady. And I wondered, like, why is she so happy? Because most of the older people, when you're 4 years old, are not happy. So I'm like, what's different about Mrs. Long, my 4-year-old mind? And one day she came on and said, "Kids, you know why I'm so happy?" I'm like, "Ooh, now you have my attention."
Yeah, here we go.
It's because I have Jesus in my life. I'm like, "What?" It's like, "Yeah, I have Jesus in my heart, and that's what makes me so happy." I'm like, "That makes sense." So that night, I went and prayed my little 4-year-old prayer of Jesus, come into my heart. And that's where it started. Now, as I progressed in my Christianity, I came to know what that meant and prayed various prayers over the years. When you go to Christian youth camp or had just went to chapel because I went to a Christian school and they said, "All right, everyone pray this prayer." I'm like, "I will pray this prayer because I'm a good third grade student now," and prayed the prayer. But that's where it all started.
Every year at camp, that's what you do. You walk down the aisle, you cry, usually nail your sins to the cross once or twice.
I'm like, oh, this is, I don't know if we can say this on this podcast, but I remember going to one when I was in junior high, and they were talking about the big M and sexual sin and whatnot. At that point, I didn't know what that meant. I'm like, the closest thing in my mind was M&Ms. I'm like, candy's a sin? I don't know what this means. I was sheltered at that point. This was like pre-internet.
Yeah, so, of course.
So nothing made sense to me. I'm like, oh, okay. Don't do M.
One of those things you just file away.
It's like, yeah, it's either candy or drugs. Either way, I'm good.
And as good Christian children, we learned that both were bad.
Yes, especially the candy part is we can only go to the church Halloween get-togethers, and then you can only have one piece of candy from each boot.
Obviously. Whether you win or lose, which was infuriating to me as a kid. Because I was like, okay, this little girl just like tried and failed at whatever the game was. She got a piece of candy. That's nice. Go away. And then, like, I would bomb. I'd be like, I'd pop all the balloons, knock down all the pins, and get the same stupid piece of candy. What, as, like, an 8-year-old, slightly competitive person, what is this? Like,
right?
So, let me ask you a question that I like to ask teachers that I talk to. If you could give your students one piece of advice that they would 100% take and apply, what would it be?
Because you're in my math class, you're in a math intervention class, so it's different than a regular class, and you're here because you may have missed things in your regular instruction that you may not have gotten. So what I want you to do is be okay with making mistakes. You won't get better unless you make a mistake. Making mistakes means you're trying. And if you make a mistake, I can help you with it because I can actually see what you're doing. I can't read your mind. I haven't mastered that skill yet. I've been there. And I was scared to make a mistake because growing up in my math classes, I literally had the stereotypical old school marm. Her name was Mrs. P. Great math teacher, but she had the pulled back tight black hair. She walked around with a ruler, not like a 1-foot ruler, like a yardstick in her hand, and would tap on your desk if you're getting things wrong. So I'm like, I've been in that kind of situation, and making mistakes was not something we could do. But that's what I want my students all to know. It's like, I want your mistakes so we can fix them. And usually it's not something big. Usually it's something tiny. And once that falls into place, other dominoes start to fall. So making mistakes is the way to get better.
Well, I suspect we're going to come back to that at some point. Where I had asked you to think about a verse or a group of verses that speak to education, speak to being a Christian in that sphere. Where are we headed?
There's a couple places you could have gone. There's the traditional train up a child to go and he will not depart from it. It's like too easy. Too easy for me. What it brought me to was Luke 6:40-45.
Okay.
And the 40 starts off, the student is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like their teacher. And it goes on to say that you take a speck of sawdust out of your brother's eye, pay no attention to your plant in your own eye. No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. And this is kind of where I was talking about with mistakes. Is I've had the sawdust in my eye. I've had the plank in my eye when it comes to math and being a student. It's like, and so I want those students that I have to not be afraid of math.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something to fear. It's something that we're going to use in daily life. Now, it may not be calculus. It may not be solving equations back and forth. But the students I have trouble with basic arithmetic. They're not being able to add, multiply, divide. And so I want them to be able to attack those kind of problems that they're going to see in their daily life and not be scared to get the wrong answer.
So let me pause you for a second. Let's backtrack slightly because I want to get into that application stuff. But so I'll read just so that we have that context. It says, a disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, brother, let me take out the speck that is in your eye, when you yourself do not see the log that is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take out the speck that is in your brother's eye. Verse 43, for no good tree bears bad fruit, nor again does a bad tree bear good fruit. For each tree is known by its own fruit. Figs are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor are grapes picked from a bramble bush. The good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good. The evil person out of his evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. What would you say, what would you tie as the big idea of that chunk? What is Jesus really, through Luke's account, emphasizing?
Well, a lot of this is like the topic statement, is everyone who will be fully trained will be like their teacher. And so the verses that follow kind of unpack that, but that's like a topic, big sentence idea that they're going for. And for them, the teacher being Jesus, that's what they want to be fully trained in. And no, it does not apply directly to math in this particular verse, what Luke's talking about, but I see how this applies to all teaching and student relationships.
Yeah, so what does that look like progress-wise? Because your students also are not going to finish the school year on your level of teaching. So how do you mark those, or how do you think Jesus would have us mark that progress day to day?
I can liken this to my students is at the end of every lesson, I always have a little check for their understanding of what did you learn today? And a lot of times it's not a huge leap. And sometimes it's, oh, I understood how to put this symbol in the right place or how to put this number in the right place. And a lot of times for us, as we're walking in day to day, that's what we're trying to get at, is not a huge paradigm shift. Because that doesn't usually happen all at once. It's the little incremental day by day changes that we can implement and make part of how we view the world and how we go forward with the world. And I think that's really important, because in like today's culture, everything wants to be done now. And in terms of technology progress, and a lot of these things we do have now. But in terms of changing our hearts and sanctifying ourselves, becoming more like Christ, that's not going to be a microwave solution. It's going to be cook it on the stove properly. Like all chefs tell you to say, chefs hate microwaves for the most part. It's on the stove, in the oven, taking the time to do it properly and get the best final product. And that's where we're ultimately going.
Within the book of Luke, where does this passage slide into the gospel story as a whole? You know, all the way from creation to the return of Christ, where does this instruction fit in the gospel story?
This whole idea of sanctification is the entire cycle. Because as you see from the beginning, it's God has it great, has it perfect. We mess it up, we have the fall, we get back up, try to get back to okay, and then it just turns into a cycle. And so us learning that process of being sanctified, becoming more like Christ, putting away the old man to the new man and becoming more like our teacher. That's what this whole process is. And that's what the gospel message is having us go through that cycle, having to go through that process. And sometimes it's not fun. Sometimes it's going to not look like a full process. But in order to gain our Christ-like state, going more towards what he has taught us to be, that is the entire process. And so the gospel for us, I don't think it can be just put in one particular place, which is awesome, because as teaching one of my students, it's never done. It's like when I get done with my students, they're ready to exit my class, like, oh, I could have taught you more. It's like, oh, I wanted to teach you this. I'm like, but they have to be able to take the tools that I gave them and be able to progress on their own. Which
that brings up actually kind of my next question is, and setting aside the gospel point for just a moment, what separates in your mind a good teacher from a great teacher?
A good teacher can help students know exactly what they're teaching. It's like, all right, we're going to learn how to add numbers today. You know how to add numbers. A great teacher will show you, okay, now that you add numbers, you can be able to build on it afterwards. Once I'm gone, a great teacher will be able to know, give them the process, be able to give them the information that they'll be able to synthesize into different It's called scaffolding. So different levels of those for me, math, that when they think back and once they get into high school or they get into college, they say, oh, Mr. Reyes taught me this particular thing, and I can use it now. Great teachers leave that lasting mark that follow their students once they're gone.
So information versus a tool in the toolbox, sure. Something that doesn't just live in your memory.
Absolutely.
Similar, but sort of catty corner to that. What separates a teacher from a Christian teacher? Let's assume in a secular world. So you're not teaching in a Christian school. What separates even a good or great teacher in that world from a good or great teacher living for Christ?
Well, then, like the difference between a good and a teacher versus a Christian teacher, the Christian teacher will give students that spark of Jesus in their class that will stay with them beyond just the hour or so you have with them, or the year or so that you have with them. Because as a teacher, especially here in Los Angeles, it's very, I would say, a hostile environment, where teachers have been reprimanded or even fired for sharing out their faith. While other ideas out there in the culture can be talked about freely in classes, Jesus is the one thing that's just like, no, we're not talking about that at all. And if you do, you're gone. Like, oh, okay. So it's more about what is it about me and how I connect with my students that make them see, okay, Mr. Reyes is not just my math teacher. There's something more about Mr. Reyes that makes him care in a different way than another teacher. And so being able to show Christ rather than telling of Christ to my students is really, really important.
So practically then, that's a little bit philosophical, and it's a little bit like, yeah, that all sounds like good things. And I'll give you two options on this. How does that fundamentally change your preparation, your execution of teaching, and or how would you like it to? How do you aspire for that to change how you do what you do?
Well, a lot of that is patience for me personally, because I am very impatient when it comes to giving information, moving on from information, and then applying the information. It's like, because I know this, like, okay, how come the kids aren't getting this? Get this. This is an easy thing versus other things you get. But for me, it's showing the patience, trying to understand where they're at and helping them work through it. Because a lot of times when you're in a professional teaching situation, you have teachers can have between 100 and 200 students on their caseload. And a lot of times teachers don't have time for patience or to be able to slow down. They treat students just like another cog in the wheel, say, okay, you're a number on my roster sheet and I got to move you on. But showing that care and having kids know that you have the intention and that you actually care about not just getting them an A, but that you care that they're there and for them as a person. I've seen throughout the years I've been teaching, when I'm able to connect with students like that, not only do their math scores go up, but our relationship strengthens and they're able to ask me questions. And when they ask me questions directly about Mr. Reyes, how come you care? Other teachers just don't care. How come you care? And that opens the door to sharing about Christ with them the little bit that I can, plant seeds. So once that opens up, they ask me more and more. And I've had a few students where I've had those more in-depth conversations at lunches and at Christian club meetings during lunch, during off times. And it's all sparking for me investing in them and then seeing what that returns.
Patience to invest until those opportunities present themselves.
Absolutely.
Going back to something you said earlier, how does that attitude of I want your mistakes, how does that translate? How does that relate to students in your class in particular who have made a lot of mistakes and who are some of them at least tracking behind their peers? How does that translate to present those opportunities?
Well, students that I get, and particularly math intervention of what I teach, is they come in with an attitude of already feeling defeated. And it's not just it seems when students are defeated in math, it kind of translates onto them personally. Like they feel, I'm dumb. I don't get it. My self-worth is at a lower level, and I don't understand. Now, they may not be able to express those kind of things, but you can see that. And so when I say, your mistakes aren't bad, that kind of they kind of take back. It's like, what do you mean my mistakes aren't bad? I'm not supposed to make mistakes. No. Mistakes are how you learn. And you see that softening already. Like day one, I give that speech day one, and you can already see them from day two. I'm like, okay, they're a little bit more receptive. And I've had students that come in that couldn't multiply 5 times 5. They couldn't, that made no sense to them. And by the end of it, they're solving algebra equations. And this is in a span of 2 to 3 months, just working with them. And when they come in, they're kind of shy, they're reserved, they don't want to say anything. And by the end, I can't get them to stop talking. Whether it's, hey, what did you do for the weekend? Well, I went here and I did this and I wanted this. And this next week we're going up here. And all right, say, great, now let's do this math problem. And then they're explaining to me. And by the end, they're doing more talking about math and their life than I am.
Which is good.
Which is an awesome goal. Because so once they're able to explain it back to me in like a reverse teaching process, you can see them light up, like, all right, I got this. And so when it comes time for their final and they get 100% on their final, I'm like, I did it, Mr. Reyes. Like, yes, you did. Like, thank you. You're welcome. Now, back to your regular classes. Like, aw. Because that's another thing I tell my students is, it is a weird thing for me to say, but I want you to put me out of a job. I want you to not need me anymore. That is the whole goal. And once you do that, it's going to be a lot easier for you. And that's another thing that always looked at me weird. Like, what do you mean put you out of a job? It's like, don't worry. There will be more kids to teach math to. Don't worry about me. But once you don't need me anymore, that is a good sign. That's what we're trying to get to. They're like, oh, okay. I can do this. Like, yes, you can do this. It's all right. So I see that direct like raise in their self-confidence, which makes them more open, and it just opens up a lot more doors than just being able to solve a math problem.
You kind of give the beginning and what the end product looks like, and it's exciting. For someone who talks about patience, where do you draw the encouragement along the way where you go like, oh, something is happening. I often, you know, talk about evangelism and sharing Jesus and going, I embarrassed myself here and I talked to this person. They didn't want to accept Christ on the spot. Mm-hmm. And so where do you see with students along the way where you're going, oh, something is happening. Something is, what are those, some of those markers?
Well, really, that it's every class that I do that with them. It's a common teaching term called checks for understanding, is where you ask them questions throughout the lesson to see if they're understanding, see if they're paying attention. And you can see those little markers throughout the lesson. And when you finally get to the end, they can do a problem on their own. And so that's math, I think, more than most subjects, have those concrete examples where you can see if they get it or they don't get it. Versus like a language class or an English class where it's more interpretive and you don't know what they're getting from session to session. So that's why when we were in college and I was trying to figure out what subject I'm going to teach, when I was tutoring math in order to get money to eat, it came off a math tutor. And I'm like, oh, maybe I should just do this now as my profession going forward, because as you know, I was going to be a theology professor, and that didn't work out. I was like, okay, I've been doing math. We're gonna
thankfully,
do yeah, right.
Let me ask you this, and it's sort of the big picture idea for this podcast as a whole. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 31: "In everything that you do, whether you eat, drink, or whatsoever you do, do it to the glory of God." And we grew up, you and I both kind of grew up knowing that and hearing that and knowing that whatever your career path is, whether it's ministry or not,
Your life is ministry.
Right?
Right? Your world is the mission field.
Hmm.
Okay. Thanks, guys. What do I do with that? So for you as a teacher, mm-hmm. how do you teach to the glory of God?
Oof. To me, it's really an undercurrent, because math requires logic, thinking through problems, and understanding what's before you. And if I'm able to teach students that process of thinking through problems or obstacles before them, that goes into my other passion for apologetics, of being able to think through a lot of the common questions and struggles we have just about being alive, being on this earth. And math is a really good concrete way to start that thinking process. It's ordering your thoughts, seeing what the problems might be. It's like, okay, how can I understand this? And to me, I think that is one of the things I want to impart on the students as they go forward, is not just accept what's in front of them. It's like, oh, it's unsolvable. Oh, I can't know this. Like, no, you can think through this and get to a logical conclusion. Because that's something that I'm really happy that God has given us in this life, is there is logical conclusions to be drawn to a lot of the major questions we have. Whether we want to accept those conclusions or not is a different thing. But we can reach those with good evidence and understanding.
Mm-hmm. So what do we do with that day to day? Let's assume that what you said we agree with, mm-hmm. that we do have the tools, we do have the purpose, we do have... And I would say, get as practical, as tangible. I'm always telling my students, what can you do with this tomorrow? What can you do with this at school? What can you do with this in your friend circles and your work circles? Give me an example or two of, practically, how can you live that out?
So for instance, sharing Christ within the education context. One, be ready for opportunities. Don't shut yourself off just because you may be busy that day. Like right now, as we're reporting this, it's getting to the winter break. So a lot of things are really busy. We're getting report cards. We're getting finals done. We're getting papers graded. And a lot of that can be on the forefront of our mind. And the opportunities that we see, whether to share Christ or to show Christ on a daily basis with my students, that can be pushed out of the way because I have to get things done. I have to get my job done. But if I'm able to slow down, see that patience, like we're talking about, opportunities may be there when people are always equally as busy. Or one thing that I shared with you last night, I was at a chicken restaurant and had the lady in front of me ask a million questions about things that were not on the menu. Like, do you have baked apples here? It's like, does it look like it has baked apples on the menu?
Cut to Paul Rudd at Baskin Robbins.
Right.
I just want a burger. Dude, ice cream. Ice cream, man. Something you just said that I want to go a little bit, I want to dig on a little bit. You talked about sharing versus showing. Mm-hmm. And I think, going back again to what you said earlier, that attitude of I want your mistakes is showing Jesus, where you may only get to share Jesus a couple times a year. Mm-hmm. You get to show in that. What about that opens doors when kids feel free to be wrong?
When kids feel free to be wrong, they're wrong. You see a lot of the wrong come out. And that gives an opportunity for correction. That gives an opportunity for encouragement. Because one thing that I consciously do with students is I don't tell them wrong. I don't say, you got that wrong. I tell them, I like how you're thinking. I like how you're approaching this problem, and I can see where you got that answer. Now let's try and think about it a different way. Because that's one thing that, as growing up being a math student, I heard the word wrong a lot. And that kind of just dug into me. I was like, I'm just wrong. I can't get this. I have no idea where I'm going. when you tell a student, like, I like how you're thinking, let's try it a different way, they feel like, oh, I'm at least on the right track. Okay, Mr. Reyes is seeing me try and is okay with me trying different things out. Because that's another thing I tell my students is, there are multiple ways you can think about a problem and get to the right answer. So just because you're not doing it my way doesn't mean you're not getting to the right answer where you should be. Because that's one thing, as a teacher, how to teach math, handed down from the state level, changes every couple years. I'm like, 2 + 2 still 4. Okay, but we need to teach it a different way. So I tell my students, like, you may see this from a different teacher a different way. And if that works for you, great. And if it's in my way, great. But keep on trying, make those mistakes. And when you allow a student to make those mistakes, that opens them up more, not only on an educational level, but you get to invest in them personally because they're freeing themselves up. Whether they think so or not, they're now opening themselves up to you. And now it's your responsibility as a teacher, especially as a Christian teacher, is to invest the right thing into them. That will help them, anchor them, and grow.
What's one thing you are still working on yourself towards that end? When you say self-analyze as a teacher, what would you like to do better with that goal in mind?
Patience is something that I always work on. There are points where I think a student should get something and they don't. Or they get it good in one session and then they come back to me in the next and it's totally gone. I'm like, you just learned this. I'm like, okay, no, step back. They may have learned it, but they have not made it a part of their thinking yet. It's like, okay, that's cool. And I tell them we can go over it again. And that's why in schools, teachers always do reviews because we know you're going to forget stuff. And it may be stuff that you taught at the very basic that they're using on a daily basis, but they don't remember that they're using it, which blows my mind a lot of times when they're adding, subtracting with negative numbers and I get them to algebra, they're able to do algebra stuff. But when I give them the basic, okay, a -3 + 5, what is that? 8? Okay, let's go over this specifically again. So it's the patience that I always have to work on because I know, to me, when I become more patient and try to perfect that patience, that is what's going to open up more doors and more opportunities with them because they're used to seeing those negativities from other teachers who are not patient and just don't understand why the kids aren't getting it. Like, well, just understand it. I taught it to you 3 times. Just get it now. It's like, no, that doesn't work.
It's funny with the negative numbers thing. I remember Mr. Perez in fifth grade.
Ooh, I love the
Well, I have to, I'm in Nebraska, but I also know how to say it right. but I remember when we did negative numbers and I was never good at math. I was stupid enough to get it in that the kids, the really smart kids, I remember one girl in our class was really smart and good grades, good at math. But she was arguing with the teacher because he explained about negative numbers. And she goes, well, if I have 0 apples, I can't have any less apples than that. And she couldn't get. So it would be like, what's 3 - 5? Well, it just has to be 0. You know, because there's nowhere else to go. Just make it negative. Like, I'm just going to keep going. And I was just, like, oversimplified. It was like, well, here's 0. What if I just call it -1? I don't know. Like,
yeah.
What if we just keep going? You know, what if 0 is just a point on the line?
Yeah.
But again, that wasn't me being smart. That was me just being simple-minded enough to just.
Yeah, that's a great point of how different students think differently. And so it's my job is to interact with them on the level that they're at to get them where they need to be. And that's where my patience comes in is like, just because I taught one student one way and they got it, it doesn't mean it's going to work with every single student. And I need to be okay with that.
Yeah.
And put in my work to do that.
Let me ask you one more question. Yeah. Students that end up in your class, mm-hmm. that piece of it is out of your control.
Yeah.
For the most part. Mm-hmm. How do you fall back on, in the terms of pursuing patience, mm-hmm. how do you fall back on the sovereignty of God that he put certain kids with certain parents in certain contexts in your class at a point in their life, particularly with the harder cases, the kids that you find yourself more frustrated with? How does that reminder affect the way that you approach those difficult relationships?
Well, based off of sovereignty of God, because a lot of things are out of my control, I'd say, okay, these students are with me now. I didn't choose them. They were not top tier pick A, first round, second round, third round picks, but they're with me regardless. Okay, this is what God has given me. Either I can be totally upset about that and ask for new students and make waves where it doesn't need to make waves, or I say, this is who is supposed to be with me right now. Okay, this may be challenging, whether it's the students or their home life, because a lot of times their home life bleed into classes because they're at home. I teach through a homeschool charter system, so I'm literally looking into their homes right now. And you could see a lot of stuff going in the back. I've seen disrobed people. I've seen animals. I've seen sibling fights in the background where yep. mom had to come in and break them up. So understanding where the kids are at and getting to see that, a lot of teachers don't get to see that just because they're in a brick and mortar school. But mm-hmm. being able to see that aspect of their life, it's like, oh, okay, they may not be coming from the greatest place right now. I yep. need to pour in more of myself with them and be okay with that in order for them to get what they need out of this experience.
Mm.
So, and that's yep. something that a lot of my teacher colleagues don't understand. And talking to them and saying, they're in my class, they should be able to do this, and the end. I'm like, you're not wrong technically.
Yeah. Well, and you fall, whether talking about encouraging someone towards Jesus or just towards education, you will fall as just one brick on the road.
Oh yeah.
My dad used to always tell the story of before he was saved, and he was at a park and some guy walked up to him and said, hey, can I talk to you about Jesus? And my dad grew up Jewish and kind of cursed the guy out and left. And the guy just said as he was leaving, like, hey, mister, I'm going to pray for you.
Mm.
And my dad tells that story as like that's stuck in the back of his mind, that he hopes to see that guy in heaven someday. And being like, you don't know this, but you are part of my story.
Mm.
And some of us get to plant seeds. Some of us get to water them. Some of us get to harvest. Mm-hmm. And I know as a youth pastor, it's frustrating sometimes when a kid leaves your ministry, leaves your church, and then like his college pastor gets to pray with him to accept Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And then I catch myself kind of being like curmudgeon-y. It's like, oh, you got saved, but you did it wrong.
It's like, hey, it's like, I need that point on my scoreboard. Forget that other guy.
Exactly. And it's so ludicrous because we all have our part, and you don't know not only for the student in your class, but the family around them.
Oh yeah.
Because you talked about seeing kids' confidence and self-worth, self-value, how that might impact even their larger sphere. And we just kind of have to leave those things in God's hands.
Yeah. I had the opportunity to talk with one of my high school teachers a while back. I became a teacher myself, and I told her she was my junior year English teacher. Great teacher, Mrs. Rowe. She was awesome. She allowed me to do a lot of creative writing and perform, if you would, in English class, the various things I had written out.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. And I just told her, thank you for letting me do that. And especially a couple of pieces that I was really proud of and made the class laugh. And it was really, really great. And she looked at me and said, I'm so glad I was able to do that for you. I don't remember that at all. Okay. So, I mean, we can leave lasting impressions on people that we don't remember, but it impacts them greatly. Mm-hmm. So that's something I like to keep in my mind of like, okay, I may not remember my interactions with a kid I had 2 years ago, but something I did may have impacted them. So I need to be on my best for them because I don't know how I'm going to impact their life 3, 4, 5 years down the line.
because I kind of want to wrap up every episode with asking, is there a particular book, movie, radio show, podcast, whatever, that has helped you follow Jesus better in a secular world, in a secular workplace?
This is kind of secular, but kind of not. I would say the Dude Perfect. There are a bunch of Christian guys who do sports videos.
Yeah.
But they don't preach, I would say, at all. It's like 99% is not mentioning Jesus. They're just a bunch of guys out there doing crazy sports things, having fun. But once you learn that they're Christians afterwards, you can see that infect every part of how they speak to each other, how they interact with their fans, how they interact with different celebrities that they have on there, and their overall demeanor. I'm like, okay, I can see Christ shining through that. And this is how you can become a big YouTube channel. Millionaires, those guys are.
Yeah.
And infect, I would say infect, but affect the world for Christ in a secular manner.
That's funny, because I didn't know they were Christian. I love Dude Perfect. Didn't know they were Christians. When you and I were like in college, they were one of the big YouTube famous channels for our generation. And then you started to see them in like mainstream things, and you're like, wait. NBC isn't supposed to know about Dude Perfect.
Right.
I didn't know they were Christians, but that's amazing. I'll have to rewatch some stuff.
Yeah, right on.
Well, did I miss anything? Anything that you desperately wanted to say that you didn't have time to say or didn't get a chance to say?
I've never really gotten a chance to speak on something I've been doing for 15 years now in this way. Mm-hmm. So, and some of the stuff that came out of my mouth right now, I didn't realize I thought that. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah.
Right, okay, yeah. Well, good. Good. Valuable conversation.